This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer, a free-for-all Friday.
You're asking to hear something I don't want to say, but if I do say it, I think you ought to hear it.
You got anything on your chest besides your chin, you better get it off.
All right, then you asked for it.
Yes, we did. So lay it on us. Free for All Friday means you set the tone. Sitting in for Libby Znaimer, here is Jane Brown.
Libby is on vacation. It is great to be here with you for this first Free for All Friday of 2026. Wow, welcome to it. Text line is open, whatever is on your mind. And by the way, we are working on our phone lines, looking forward to a fix at some point in the very near future. But for now, text away at 866-740-4740, 866-740-4740, whatever in the news has you talking. And we have Libby has temporarily reinvented Free for All Friday while we wait for our phone lines to be restored. So we've compiled another crack panel on this Free for All Friday, as Libby's been doing the last few weeks. And today we have Fight Back producer Zeev Hadi making his Free for All Friday panel debut. We also have occasional Fight Back fill-in host and National Post columnist and lawyer Tasha Carradine with us, and Zoomer Radio host of many programs and filling in this last week with me on the Morning Zoom with Andy and Jane, Dean Holland. Welcome, everyone.
Hey.
Hello.
Hey, how are you? Hello.
Sounding good. Tasha and Dean and I are all around the same age, so we wanted to bring in the millennial perspective as well with Zeev Hadi. So Zeev, I'll start with you. Have you made any resolutions for 2026? Or if not resolutions, do you have any goals or things you would like to accomplish for this coming year?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I'd like to see a whole bunch more classical music performances. One of the benefits, as I've told you before, is working at the station is being adjacent to Classical FM and getting a chance to talk to Kathleen Kajioka and all the other wonderful talent and exploring new classical music. So I really want to be able to see live performances as much as I can.
And what has prompted this desire to see more classical music?
Well, the more I work here, the more I realize, like, I'm exploring it, just so much more of the music that's out there. And a couple weeks ago, I went to see Messiah, and I spoke about that experience here on Zoomer Radio, and it's an unforgettable experience. So, yeah.
Wonderful. How about you, Tasha? Any goals, resolutions?
So, I don't always make New Year's resolutions. I usually save resolutions actually for my birthday, thinking of like the year ahead, you know, another year or turn around the sun. But I did get inspired over the holidays to say that I have this novel that I've been working on and working it. Everyone has a novel they've been working on. I know that's a catch, you know, a cliche, but I do have a novel I've been working on, and I decided that I should, after it's been rejected, the initial draft for by about, I don't know, 30 agents, I am going to give it another kick at the can this year and try and get it to a place where I can get a publisher, because I think everyone I tell about the plot of this novel, which I will not reveal now, but my close friends think it is fantastic and it has to come to life. So they inspired me over the holidays. They said, you've got to do it. You've got to do it. And so I'm going to, that's my resolution, is to get that novel to a place where I can actually get a publisher.
So this, could you tell us at least if it's fictional?
It's a fictional YA scientific dystopian novel. Yes,
there you go. Okay. Oh, that's amazing. It is great to try to do something new in midlife, and that sounds like the recipe for that. Dean, you and I have been chatting a lot this week on the Morning Zoom, but I know you want to do some household projects, but what about, you know, self-improvement? Or is there anything that you want to venture out and do this year?
Self-improvement? What are you suggesting, Jane?
Not that you're not perfect as you are. Well,
yeah. Yeah, you know what? I've got four, my wife and I have four children. Our youngest is 16. So, yeah, what are they telling me? My boys especially have been telling me that I should be doing some more weight lifting training, which is not to build the muscle, but they say, Dad, it's healthy for you, and this is something you should work into your regime. So I'm thinking a lot about that. And yeah, on the home front, again, because my children are now getting older and are, you know, two of them are not even living at home anymore, and they're increasingly more independent, and they increasingly need me less than they used to. And so I want to thin out the stuff in the house. And that has also been amplified because my sister and I just moved my mother in the fall into a long-term retirement. And when you have to empty out your parents' houses, which I've had to do a couple of times, you start to think to yourself, I am not going to leave my stuff for my children.
Right. So annually purging a little bit is a good idea.
Yep. Yeah, that's one. Yeah.
And Tasha, you were telling us on the morning Zoom on Wednesday that you had a bunch of teenage girls coming over to party
yeah,
with your daughter.
How did that go, Tasha?
Yeah.
It was fantastic, actually. My daughter's friends came, and the house is still standing. I'm happy to report. They actually left it. It's actually eerily tidy. They confined themselves mostly to our basement. And so there's some mess down there, but not significant. And they were super polite. They were singing. They were doing karaoke. They were playing Cards Against Humanity and other random games. They were up till 4:30 and did wake me up at 4:30 screaming some kind of, I don't know if it was a TikTok challenge or something they were yelling. I did not know. I rolled over and went back to sleep. But that was the worst thing they did. Honestly, it was super fun to see them enjoying themselves. And I like Dean, my daughter's older now and almost out of the house in a couple of years probably. So it's still sweet to have that happen here.
Yeah, no, for sure. What our listeners don't know, I mean, we're very close here at Zoomer Radio. We're from all the different generations, which is Moses' vision, right? Having people of different age groups all working together every day. Ziv and I have been working together for many years now, coming
That's
up
right.
on seven, I think.
Yep.
And I always joke that Ziv is my work son because he's basically the same age as my kids and stepkids.
Yeah.
So what did you do on New Year's Eve, Ziv?
Well, I got together with a bunch of my close friends. And to me, hanging out at a friend's apartment, socializing, that's the most important thing for me. Actually, more important than going out. And that's what we did afterwards. We went out and we had some champagne or Prosecco, perhaps, and clinked some glasses. And yeah, it was a great night.
Well,
so.
I have a big year coming up. This is the first time I'm going to talk about it on the radio. I know I've been given approval to talk about it. My stepson, Nick, and his wife, Jillian, are expecting.
Ooh.
Yes. Congratulations.
Yes. So I will be venturing into the land of grandparenthood. Myron and I are super excited about that. We kind of knew it would be coming because we knew that they were motivated to have a family. And so I've known for about 2 months. This is the first time I've been able to talk about it on the radio. But it is a baby girl, and she is coming in May. And she got more presents than anybody at Christmas. So it's going to be a whole new scene for us at our home. We've been empty nesters now for a few years, a bunch of years. We're blessed that all four of our kids got post-secondary educations and have partners and live in their own places and all of that kind of stuff. But we have kind of missed having little ones around. So this will be cool. Bye, Kathy Hyde.
Bye, Kathy.
So let's kind of talk about, and it's in tandem with everything we've been discussing, a new survey, we were reporting on it this morning, suggesting two-thirds of Canadians are either happy or very happy with how things went in 2025. That seems like a pretty solid number. And what people are looking for in 2026 depends on their generation. So people in the 55 plus crowd want good health or more good health. And people, the younger people, the millennials, want more money. And I guess, Tasha, that's not really a surprise.
No, not at all. It bears out what we've been seeing for the past couple of years, whether socially, politically, all the trends point to this big disparity in where generations are at and their satisfaction with either the status quo or improving it slightly, which is the older crowd, basically boomers, and also, like you said, the Gen Xers, 55 and over, versus Gen Zs and millennials who feel shortchanged. They can't buy a house. They can't afford, in some cases, even to rent. They are stuck with their parents, or they can't find the job they want. They're doing gigs in the gig economy. It's really a divide. And so the satisfaction shows that. Our election showed that. It's not surprising, but it's something that we all have to be conscious of, because we want our kids to get, you know, the same quality of life and standards and things we enjoy. So we have to be mindful. Our leaders have to be mindful of that as well.
And all, along those lines, Dean, with your four kids up and coming, some older, some younger, you know, does the bank of mom and dad, do you see that figuring in the future so that they can get a piece of the real estate pie? Because it is very difficult with the average price of a home, around $1 million, 1.1 here in the city of Toronto, to get a down payment, much less make the monthly payments.
Sure. My kids grew up in a very, very modest income family. I mean, I've worked in the arts my whole life and had no right to have four children, but we did. And, you know, and so they have actually, as a result, turned out very, very independent. My oldest boy just moved himself to BC back in August, and my oldest daughter has been out of the house for a number of years and is, you know, also going to school for a law human rights stream. And, you know, typically they do not come to us for anything. They're very, very self-sufficient. But down the line, yeah, I could see them looking for some help. I did want to add this in as well, and that is that one of the things that I noticed is that in line with this and what they're opting to do with their lives, when I was growing up, and I think maybe the same for Tasha and for Jane, you know, it was more about what I wanted to do with my life, what I wanted to be. And the conversation that I found interesting, especially with my son, was that his friends, you know, they're all 22. It wasn't as focused on what they wanted to do, what they dreamed to do about. It was more about what's going to make me the most amount of money. Which direction should I go to make the most amount of money so that I can also enjoy the lifestyle that I want, which has its merits, but it was very interesting because it seemed to me a slightly different focus.
Yeah, what I've said to my kids, Jamie's turning 30 this coming year and Jacob is turning 32. What I always said to them is figure out something you love to do and then get paid for it. And I'm wondering, Zeev, you know, what kind of guidance your parents have given you and how much of that you've embraced and how much is charting your own path.
Yeah, and I think much of the advice I've received throughout my life is to do what you love. And I know it sounds cliche, but I love audio storytelling. So that's why I'm in this business. And I love reporting and going out in the field. I think for me, where I've been seeing in terms of like the high cost of living has obviously, for everybody else would say it, is grocery shopping and going to restaurants. And it's just, you know, buying a steak. Like if I want to have steak, I know that sounds very, but having steak or with, you know, some roasted veggies on the side, like it's expensive.
Right.
So, I mean, those are the things that I've been kind of keeping my eyes open about. And yeah.
Yeah. And don't forget, the text line is open. We want to hear from you, your goals, your resolutions for 2026. Are you happy, very happy, or not happy with how this past year was? What are you looking for in 2026, depending on your generation? There seems to be a difference. Older people want health because you really can't have happiness without health. 866-744-7740, 866-744-7740. Zeev has the text line. Who are you hearing from?
Yeah, so we have a text that came in from Barty. And she says that her New Year's resolution is two-part. One is to not procrastinate. That's her biggest sin. By listing my to-do list on basis of priority. The second is to declutter my house. I don't like parting with my things until I find the right person to give them away to.
Ah, okay. Interesting. 866-744-740. Keep the texts coming. Tasha, when you hear about this survey in terms of the, I mean, we are all very lucky, right? So we probably feel happy with 2025. But what's important for you in the future of this next year?
Well, apart from personal goals, I think we're at a very strange time for people like myself who are interested in politics and who, you know, for whom the fate of the country is kind of more than just an existential thing they might read in a headline. We have to keep track of it every day. I mean, I write my column for the National Post, but I also write for other international publications. So I'm sadly aware of all the bad things that are happening around the world. Mm-hmm. And it is, you know, the conflicts to keep your eye on seem to multiply, even as some damp down, like the conflict in Gaza is no longer on the front page. But we have now, you know, potential conflict with Iran. Could the U.S. be at war with Venezuela? You know, things sprout all over the place. So I guess for 2026, what I would ideally love would be less of that, right? But I'm not sure how we get there, because we are entering a shift in geopolitics in terms of how the U.S. sees itself in the world. And that affects Canada directly. We have conflicts inside our country in Alberta and Quebec where people are talking about referenda. I mean, it just feels like a really fraught time. So, you know, I have to keep an eye on these things, but I'm also trying to see the positive and the ways out and the solutions. And I think that's what we need to talk about the most at that level, that macro level of stuff, is how do we solve this, damp down the conflict, the bitterness on social media that feeds it, all these things, because, you know, we have to have less hate in the world. Let's just say it flat out. There has to be less hate. We have to tolerate less hate. We have to, here at home as well, ensure that we live peacefully with each other. And that's what our country's always been about. So that's what I'm looking at in 2026. I hope the volume of hatred goes down.
Yeah, well said. Dean, are you looking for more health, more money, a combination of things for the coming year?
Sure. You know what? I always love a bit more money. always love just a little bit more.
Yeah.
Sure. That would be nice to feel a little bit more secure in that. I have to say that I've actually done a lot of a fair amount of reflecting this past year, which changed my perspective a bit. You know, I had a good friend of mine who died of the same brain cancer that Gord Downie died from. Mm-hmm. He was diagnosed the year before that. He died a year ago, this December 8th. He was only 60. And I started to think about what I have and what I don't have. And I looked at the big picture, and I have discussed this. I've had these discussions with all of my kids, and I've said, you know what? I am a very, very blessed man that I have all of you. That I have, you know, my wife, Gail, who I am, you know, still head over heels in love with after 28 years. And I live in a lovely country. I live in a really nice place. I mean, I've lived in Collingwood for 22 years, a great community. I have generally good health. And so I go, you know what? I have a lot to be grateful for. And in fact, if I had a whole lot of money, I think people would just want to punch me in the face because they think I had way
You'd
too
have
much.
Too much.
Yeah. And so, and I go, yeah, I don't think you can have everything, but right. I've said to my kids, I said, if something happens to me, if I don't make it home tomorrow night, I said, please let the takeaway be how blessed I was, mm-hmm. and not how tragic this is, you know, because mm-hmm. I have a great many things. So I agree with Tasha, with all she said about everything that Tasha said. If there's one little detail I disagree or that I look at maybe a little differently, it's not a disagreement, is that because I grew up with my grandparents having escaped, you know, Czechoslovakia in 1948 from the, you know, from political unrest there and escaping through the woods at night, and living for a year in a camp before coming onto Canada, I have grown up feeling very grateful, and I know that there have been conflicts long before I was born. That people, you know, my grandparents experienced hunger and bombs as well, and so unfortunately, it's something that has existed, well before me. And I hope that once again we can figure out how to diffuse these things, and we can all just get along. And celebrate our differences rather than be at odds with them.
And we will talk more about that in the next segment of Free for All Friday with our special Free for All Friday panel, Dean Holland, Tasha Carradine, Zeev Hadi, and yours truly, Jane Brown, for Libby Znaimer. Let's go from the personal to the politics in this next segment and talk about our different leaders, how we think they have done in 2025, what we would like to see them do in 2026. And we want your input as well. 866-740-4740. Our Zoomer Radio Free for All Friday text line, 866-744-740.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer. A Free for All Friday. Step up, say your piece, and we promise not to interrupt. Just be lively about it. We have a lot of listeners hanging on your every word. Sitting in for Libby Znaimer, here is Jane Brown.
Well, today's Free for All Friday is a little bit like a New Year's levy, all coming together and talking about the year that has been and what we're looking forward to in the year to come. And if you haven't checked in with us here on Fight Back in a little while, we have had some technical issues, which will come to an end. But for now, we don't have our phone lines. We do have our text line. So we look forward to hearing from you on what in the news has you talking, how you think the different political leaders did over the past year. We can revisit goals and resolutions for 2026, 866-744-740, 866-744-740. And on our special Free for All Friday panel today is Fight Back producer Zeev Hadi, occasional Fight Back fill-in host, National Post columnist Tasha Carradine, and Zoomer Radio host Dean Holland. And it's great to have everybody in this conversation. Tasha, I liked what you said on Wednesday when you began your segment on Ukraine and whether peace is imminent or whether it's still a long way off. And you referenced it in the last segment, how we really, I mean, we all want peace for Ukraine. We all want Vladimir Putin to step down. And if Donald Trump can facilitate this, I don't know if he actually can. I think, you know, we would all be so grateful.
We would. Ukraine's conflict's been going on for 4 years at this point. And there was just, again, over the new year, both countries, Ukraine and Russia, are trading accusations of strikes and violence and death. As at the same time, as you mentioned, Trump wants to broker a peace, has said, I think, 84 times that he could bring peace to Ukraine in, like, you know, a matter of hours, which clearly has not happened. But yeah, it is something that all of us would like to see, not just for the bloodshed on the ground, but because, yes, it's seen as a stepping stone for Russia if it makes gains in Ukraine to potentially eye the Baltic states and other places in Europe. And that affects everyone. It affects us here in Canada, because guess what? Our military budget, we're ramping it up in a way we haven't since the Second World War. So, you know, people think, oh, it's a conflict over there, it doesn't affect us. It affects everyone. It affects your pocketbook. It affects you. It affects all countries in NATO, including us. So it's something to keep an eye on. And yes, I do hope that conflict is resolved in a way that is fair to Ukraine, because they are the country that was attacked, not Russia.
Yes, and Volodymyr Zelensky has said on many occasions, if Vladimir Putin takes Ukraine, just wait. He will keep on marching. And you know, when you're watching and listening to all of the analysts, including Andrew Rizoulas, who you had on the other day, Tasha, I mean, there is a widespread feeling that Vladimir Putin is playing Donald Trump, and Donald Trump continues to play into Vladimir Putin's well, I guess his vision for what he sees ultimately for Russia. Zeev, we watch very closely in the Zoomer Radio Classical FM newsroom the ongoings in this war, as well as the Israel-Hamas war, which is in a ceasefire. What are your thoughts about the situation?
Well, one thing I noticed post the war and has ended in Israel, and we're seeing still attacks against the Jewish community here at home. And that's one of the things that has been, you know, as a Jewish person myself, something that I've been really fearful of, and that I've seen, that I've noticed has been happening. Even though there's a ceasefire, there's still, you know, arrests being made for hate-motivated attacks and stuff like that. So that's something that has made me sort of worried.
And as a Jewish person living in Toronto, how do you conduct yourself? In other words, like, are you going to your synagogue regularly, or have you pulled back as a result of the possibility of targeting of Jewish-related institutions?
Well, one of the things I have noticed is that, because I live in a Jewish in a Jewish neighborhood, yeah, like a predominantly Jewish neighborhood, and I've noticed that there's a lot of police presence, whether it be at the local plaza, in front of schools. And this is something that I never imagined I'd ever see in my life. And to see that, it's jarring. It's and to see that to still be the case even now, so many, you know, months after the ceasefire, like, mm-hmm, I mean, we're still seeing some sort of, like, it feels threatening.
It feels threatening. Okay. Dean, watching these global conflicts and staying up on current affairs as you do, what are your thoughts around the global conflicts?
I also think that Putin, I think he's just biding his time. I don't think he has any real desire to end it. I think that he wants, I think, people to think, that's my opinion, that he wants people to think that it's a back and forth. Fake news is a real problem. I think you could, but again, I don't think it's isolated to our era. I think it happened before too, in previous wars. I would love to see it end. I was struck by even Zeev's comments, I have to say, Zeev, about things that he never thought that he would experience in his life, which we have a much smaller Jewish community in the Collingwood area, although we have some good friends of ours who we share driving to dance for our youngest kids. They're a Jewish family. And, I grew up in a household there where those differences were celebrated. It never mattered. And I think that I grew up thinking that that was enough for me. If I lived my day to day, existing as a member of the community where those differences were celebrated and they didn't make a difference in a bad way, that would be enough. And I feel like I need to do something more. And I'm constantly trying to figure out what I can do at a grassroots level, mm-hmm, because I don't think we can't look to our police force and our politicians exclusively to fix this problem. I think it has to be done by us. And, you know, I'm trying to figure out, on a day-to-day basis, trying to figure out what the heck I can do to make a difference in my community.
Well, can I jump in for 1 second?
Please.
I do agree all of us should to make a difference. However, and this goes to, you know, the inaction of our police force, inaction of our mayor here in Toronto in particular, on the issue of, Palestinian and anti-Israel protests that have been happening, and happening with regularity this year, happening in a threatening way, happening, at even the Eaton Center again over the holidays, even though, as Steve pointed out, there is a ceasefire now. So can we focus on that? Mm-hmm. And the issue is apparently that, you know, police lawyers think, well, we can't, even if we charge these people, there's no hope of conviction. So let it go. That is literally the last thing that was said in the last couple of weeks on this issue. And I just feel that it is up to, there are laws. We have laws. We can have more. We can have bylaws. We can have other means that deter people from harassing other people. But unless those laws are enforced, then people will just have impunity to do whatever they want. And our laws are not being enforced. And our police, and I really, it's extremely frustrating to see this, because the more people let things go, it's like broken window theory. You know, if you don't arrest people for minor things or stop the minor crimes, things will escalate because people feel emboldened. And that is what's happened. I feel very unsafe in the city. I am not Jewish myself, but I have many Jewish friends who feel unsafe. And I feel angry at this state of affairs because it impacts everyone, not just Jewish citizens. It is a state of lawlessness that we're entering into. And it's a very dangerous path to go down.
What did you make?
I agree. I agree with Tasha on that as well. And I see the lawlessness each and every day. And it does start out small. I've seen in the last few years, you know, I see people doing 80 in 50 zones. I see people not even bothering to stop at stop signs anymore. Things that I didn't see before. Mm-hmm. And now it's just, you know, it becomes a yield sign now. And I think that the general consensus is that, you know, I'm not likely to get caught. And to that point, in the newscast today, I was aghast to hear you've got somebody who's been driving since 2001 with a suspended driver's license. How is that even possible?
It's crazy.
How can that possibly be that you can drive for 25 years with a suspended driver's license and not be figured out? I don't get this.
Tasha, what do you make of, we had the story this morning, Michael Kirzner, Solicitor General of Ontario, sending direction to Toronto police to arrest those people who are breaking the law at these demonstrations. Michael Kirzner specifically pointing out what happened at the Eaton Centre on Boxing Day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, here's the thing. So there's supposed to be an independence, right, of police forces from direction by the government, so to speak. There has been that issue. Previous conservative governments have wrestled with this issue too. Remember, cast your mind back to Ipperwash protests in the park, where Mike Harris was accused of directing the police to break up the protests. But here's the thing. Like I said, if the police are not taking action, there's a paralysis that's setting in. So I agree with Kirzner that, yes, they should be doing something. They should be enforcing the law. So is this crossing a line that he's doing, that he's saying this? Perhaps. But the unfortunate things have gotten to the point where you don't know what else to do. It's kind of like also when Justin Trudeau sent in you know, the RCMP called them in to break up the protests in Ottawa during the pandemic. People said afterwards, well, he crossed the line. He shouldn't have invoked the Emergencies Act. It was not justified. At a certain point, though, it's like, well, what can you do if mm-hmm. the police are not doing anything? So I think we really have to take a look at how our police do enforce the law. It's a multifaceted thing. It's for how judges will, you know, will they or not convict someone? What are the standards? Everything. But yeah, I think I agree with what Kirzner's saying, because to the points both Dean made and I made earlier, if you allow lawlessness to persist, you end up in a situation where people think they can get away with a lot of really bad stuff.
Well, whether he is waiting outside of his jurisdiction or not, to me, the Solicitor General's direction is simply a reminder that when you break the law, you are subject to being arrested. And I guess in so doing, he's reminding the police service, the Toronto Police Service, of this very basic fact that we all live by. This is how we live in our society. And it doesn't seem to apply in certain situations and in certain demonstrations where the peace has been compromised.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that this is why, you know, we have to, I think that's for 2026. If I bring it from the large to the small, if I'd like to have less hate in my city, because that hate is festering and being allowed to grow against the Jewish community and by extension against everyone who just wants to go about their business peacefully in the city and not be harassed and intimidated by others who think the public spaces should be theirs.
It is our special Free for All Friday panel here on Zoomer Radio. Tasha Carradine, Dean Holland, Fight Back producer Zeev Hattie, and your comments on our text line, 866-744-740. Zeev, I know we've been getting some texts. Do you want to pick one to read for us?
Yeah, this one's another New Year's resolution text, and this one comes in from Irene in Etobicoke. So she says, on this lovely sunny day, I am contemplating the question you posed about making resolutions. I have not made any in many years, but now reflecting on the past year. This makes me think that I should perhaps not call it a resolution, but a commitment to listen better, contemplate deeper, not jump to conclusions, and not judge others' decisions. Happy New Year's to you.
Oh, very nice. Yes, there's a reason we have one mouth and two ears, right? We all need to listen more. It can't hurt to listen, and even just to pause, you know, before you respond and think about it. Are you going to offend anybody in the room or someone you love because you're in a heated discussion? I mean, these are all reminders for all of us. Zeev, any more you'd like to read?
Well, nope, not yet. They're coming in as we go.
Well, there was somebody on snow clearing.
Oh, yes, of course. Ed from Dundas, Ontario. So his is a bit lengthy, so bear with me.
Okay.
Snow removal. Toronto had massive snow melters years ago. They were the size of transport trailers. Conveyors brought the snow onto the large volume and propane heated pipes. When it melted, the unit stopped by a drain and opened the bottom valve. Snow was handled once. This saved local flooding during spring as well. My idea to the government was to have 100 units parked at various airports and trucked to heavy hit areas. This would ease the financial burden on communities, as costing could fall under emergency services, no different than other weather-related problems or forest fires.
Okay. And these weather situations are only going to get more intense, the scientists tell us. And Dean, you see obviously evidence of this every year, regardless of climate change. But the storms in Collingwood, the snowstorms, a little more fast and furious this winter?
A little more fast and furious. Yeah, they're a bit up and down and sideways. I have to admit, I've experienced years here where, 15, 17 years ago, where there was very little snow on the ski hill over the Christmas holidays. And we thought, oh, my goodness, the global warming that they've been talking about, is this the beginning of the end of the skiing? And then the following year, we had the longest ski season on record. And so it does kind of bounce around a bit. But I got to tell you, we experienced some serious, serious winds this past weekend here in Collingwood. So I don't know. I sit on the fence a little bit. I don't know whether that means it's going to be like that regularly, or whether, like in past years, we're going to have severe winds some years and then not so much the other years.
Tasha, we're all kind of waiting to see what happens if we get pummeled here in the city of Toronto based on the very poor job. It was widespread sentiment that it was a very poor job in snow clearing last February when we got 3 in a row. What are your feelings on how that situation would be handled this season?
Well, I'm from Montreal, where snow is, they know how to handle snow, and snow is like a big fact of life. So when I moved to Toronto, I was like, what snow? This isn't snow. This is nothing. Yeah. I remember, when Mel Lastman called it the army. Yeah. I remember that day walking through Toronto. It was like the apocalypse had happened. I was like, this is fun. Look at all this. Like, it was, since then, I've lived here now for 16 years, and I think that the city could do a better job. I think one of the problems we have is that we have a lot of on-street parking, for one thing, which makes it really hard to clear snow. Mm-hmm. And that is, my neighborhood in Cabbage Town, everyone's got on-street parking. So good luck clearing the snow when all the cars are sitting there, and the cars end up being big blobs of snow themselves. I think that getting ahead of the storm, not waiting for it to just accumulate, is the key. You got to get out there while it's going. You can't just wait for it to be done, because when you do that, that's when it then becomes, mission impossible. So I just think, as a city, things go up and down here. We don't have that intensity of snow every year that you do see in a place like Montreal. So we are less prepared for when it is really bad. And I'm not sure how you fix it, like I said, unless you schedule things better, in the sense that when things start to fall, you make sure things stay clear, the highways, the roads. You don't just wait till it's done before you send out the trucks.
I've noticed they've done
You do have to have somewhere to put it as
yes.
well. You
know, that's and that's, true, too.
That's
yeah.
the challenge that cities have. And I mentioned this morning with you, Jane, on the morning Zoom, that having grown up in the Hamilton area and lived in the downtown area, and then moving up to Collingwood, where snow, like Tasha was saying in Montreal, snow is a way of life up here. It is part of the economy. If it doesn't snow up here, it's bad. It's bad because if you're running a business, it's bad if there's no snow, so you want it. And also, so many people have moved up here and retired here to ski in the winter and so mm-hmm. and snowboard. They want the snow here. So it's a whole different mindset. It's not an inconvenience here. But here, we just have more space around us to move the snow. And I feel bad for any city, because when that snow does fall down, where the heck do you put it? Yeah. I mean, where do you put it? You have to get in there and cart it away kilometers and kilometers away, or as I noticed in the cities, I think they put down more salt in the mix to try and drain it down the drains. And here you really don't see that in Collingwood. You very rarely see a big puddle unless the temperature goes down, because they don't throw the same salt down. They throw more sand.
I think the City of Toronto Transportation Department has been very lucky so far, but we were only on the 2nd of January. What Myron and I did notice the other day, we decided to come back from downtown and just drive all the way along Bloor to Etobicoke, and we noticed that the bike lanes are cleared really, really well. So the cyclists who...
yeah, because lots of people are cycling through the snow. It's insane.
The only vehicle that are using the bike lanes at this point in the year are the e-bikes for the food delivery people. That's it.
And they're the illegal ones, aren't they?
Those are scooters, actually.
Those are scooters.
Oh, scooters.
Okay. Yeah, they are allowed on their e-bikes, and they have their own little transportation highway thanks to all of our bike lanes. Anyway, if you don't laugh, you'll cry. We're going to take a quick break now, and we're back with our special Free-for-All Friday panel. Dean Holland, Tasha Carradine, Zeev Hadi, Jane for Libby, and your texts, 866-744-740, 866-744-740.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer.
When one considers the meaning of life, it is a struggle between alternative viewpoints of life itself.
A free-for-all Friday.
And without the ability to defend one's own viewpoint against other, perhaps more aggressive ideologies, then reasonableness and moderation could quite simply disappear.
Name your topic and be as deep as you like, as long as there's a point in there somewhere. Sitting in for Libby Znaimer, here is Jane Brown.
By the way, I am not anti-bike lane at all. I am very pro-bike lane if they're being used. And I understand it's the beginning of January. I get it. There aren't a lot of cyclists. But living out on Bloor West, beyond Jane Street, the bike lanes, even in the height of summer, are not being used. A failed experiment which started under John Tory, ironically. You might have thought that it started under Olivia Chow, but it was actually John Tory. You know, the thinking being that if you build them, they will come, but they have not come yet. And more than anything, I want them to be using the bike lanes. So I don't know, Tasha, if how we're going to resolve this issue around cycling lanes that are not being used.
Yeah, I find the City of Toronto's attitude to cycling very black and white. It does not take into account, like you said, the usage and the issues that affect pedestrians, not just cars, but pedestrians too, who are impacted by bike lanes that are now increasingly being used, like you said, by electric bikes to deliver food. These are not cyclists. These are not commuters. These are people working, and they're using those lanes. You step into one of those lanes, you're now not facing a bike going, you know, maybe 10 kilometers an hour, whatever. You're facing somebody going 30K at least and that is actually dangerous. It is dangerous for seniors. It is dangerous for people who maybe just even don't pay attention because they don't think that this is what they're going to face. So I think the idea of bike lanes, the city is like, let's put as many as we can everywhere. They put them in my neighborhood in Cabbage Town, where you can't even go over 30 kilometers an hour at all, even with a car, because there are speed bumps everywhere. So, you know, it's absurd. They spent taxpayer money to paint lanes in places where you honestly, people were peacefully riding their bikes for, 100 years in this neighborhood, and nobody. This is what I mean, though. They have quotas of, we got to get so many bike lanes, and we got, it does not take into account common sense. It's like, here's a budget, let's spend it. And I agree with you on Bloor West. The whole street too, it's also ugly. It's ugly. My mother, who, you know, grew up in Europe, she looks at Bloor and she's like, this is supposed to be the nicest shopping street in Toronto. And it looks ridiculous. It looks terrible. These little poles sticking everywhere. Yeah. And she goes, this is not, you'd never see this in a European city. They have bike lanes there, but they look attractive at least. So a lot of issues, I think, around bike lanes that I feel the city just doesn't get it.
Yeah, Myron and I were in Munich in August, and their bike lanes are well used to the point where you got to be careful as a pedestrian, right, to really look both ways before you cross the road, because Munich is a cycling city. So I don't know where we go from here. I'm not a big fan of spending money to rip them out. I'd rather encourage people to use them. And of course, we have butting heads with the provincial PCs and the Olivia Chow administration over how to deal with the bike lanes, to the point where the province took the issue to court, and on it goes. Just switch topics here a little bit. In terms of the traffic czar who is coming in this coming year, Andrew Poslins, I believe is his name. Zeev, do you like the idea of how the plan is for him to harness all the different departments in the city so that we can have a cohesive strategy toward relieving congestion?
Well, you know, you can appoint many, many czars for many, many different things. And that seems to be the way that the city approaches the, like, whenever issues like this come up. So I don't know. We'll wait and see how it goes, how he does. But at the end of the day, I feel like the city has just really lost touch with traffic congestion, and I'm really kind of losing faith here. So,
Dean, you're in and out of the city. You live in Collingwood, but what are your thoughts when you're driving toward Liberty Village and the Zoomerplex?
You know, you've got a city that has, what, 3.5 million people. Most of the cars that I see have one person in them. I don't know how any czar can fix that problem, because if you're giving people the freedom of coming, you know, going and coming when they want to, and owning as many cars as they want to, you know, volume is volume. And so I truly don't know how any new person is supposed to fix that, barring telling people that they can't drive the cars at certain times. And they, I mean, what are you supposed to do? Yeah. I don't fully understand it.
Well, the way it was explained by Brad Bradford the other day, and he reminded us here on Fight Back, and he is the only declared mayoral candidate for the October election, but he reminded us that it was actually his idea 2 years ago, and he was able to bring Olivia Chow on side with the idea, and it's hoped, Tasha, and I really respect Brad Bradford, that all of the departments, which you would think would already be aligned, they're not. So when construction projects happen, when events happen, et cetera, the different departments don't talk to each other. So the idea behind this chief congestion officer is that that person will make sure everything is coordinated.
Yeah, good luck. I think what's going to happen is a suggestion for congestion zone charges like they have in London, for example, where to Dean's point, you want to limit the number of cars. There's a way to do it, make it more expensive so that people will either then they'll say, yeah, OK, I'll double up. I'll make sure someone else in the car with me, or I'll take fewer trips or whatever. But that is what they do in other cities. And that was rejected here last year. But I mean, I think this czar is, I would not be surprised if that came out as a suggestion, which I'm not sure how that's going to fly. People are already, you know, suffering under extremely expensive parking, extremely expensive. I mean, just driving downtown, taking your car downtown, you're going to pay $40 to park for the day. You're going to pay, of course, sitting in traffic, which is, you know, brutal as well, inching along. In time, it is not a pleasant experience most of the time. Take your car downtown. People still do. So I don't know how else you discourage them. I'm not a fan of congestion charges, but I do think that's, I would not be surprised if that's on the bingo card.
I've never, Tasha, and you live in the city, I live in the city, Zeev lives in the city. I have never had a problem, probably because I'm a Toronto resident, of charging the 905ers to come in and use our Gardiner Expressway, which is now under provincial control, and the DVP. And yet that has never taken off, the idea. It's no problem for the 407 electronic toll highway, but it has never gained traction for the Gardiner and the DVP.
I'll let Dean talk to that one, because Dean comes in from a way I know.
Hey, I'm going to go to Collingwood Town Council and charge all you for coming up here.
Woo-hoo! Fair
Bring
enough.
Bringing some money for Collingwood and Blue Mountain.
Yeah, Dean,
I gotta tell you.
Yeah, go ahead.
I gotta tell you, in the last 4 or 5 years, since we had a whole lot of people moving up here during COVID, and that, I got to tell you, folks, is when I started to notice people going through stop signs and making all these shortcuts, and I blame it on the drivers from south, 2 hours south of here.
Right, the 416ers and the 905ers, because you're a 705er, right?
Big change here. Big change here in the driving habits. Yeah, that's when I saw it happen.
Okay.
And so, yep. So, you know what? I get it. I come down to Toronto only periodically. It's a bit of excitement for us, I have to say, because we're, you know, we've lived up in these areas for a long time. And my wife and I both grew up in her in Mount Hope. I grew up in Ancaster, sort of outside of Hamilton. So we grew up in smaller communities. And we come down to see a show or that type of thing. And it's exciting. We used to park further up when we had the kids, and we'd take the train down to Toronto, because it was it made more sense for us, and it also was exciting for the kids. So I would certainly recommend that to anybody.
We only have a few minutes left, and I did want you all to grade our various political leaders, which is always fun. Tasha, I'll start with you. Toronto Mayor Olivia Chow, we don't know yet if she is going to run for re-election. We know that Brad Bradford is. We don't know if John Tory wants to get involved in municipal politics again. And so far, it looks like that will be the only election we vote on. Highly unlikely we will go to a federal election with just one seat away from a majority for the Mark Carney Liberals. Any thoughts about how you think this municipal election will play out?
First of all, I give Olivia Chow a D. I really do. I think the sense of public safety in the city, as we talked earlier, has gone south, and people don't feel safe no matter what community you're in, particularly the Jewish community, though. I think that is a huge failing. And I think that sweetening the pot with, oh, we're going to increase taxes less in my last year, after whacking us for the last 2 years, doesn't fly either. Property taxes have gone up a lot, despite the fact that, people have trouble paying their bills. So I'm not loving her her governance of the city at all. And I don't know who's, if John Tory is going to get back. I mean, I would like to think that we have fresh blood too, who wants to run, people who haven't run before necessarily. But municipal politics is a strange game, because there are no parties, right? So it's really up to the individual. Name recognition's huge. So honestly, I don't know what's going to play out. Her not running would definitely change the game.
Oh yeah.
The question is, who would step into that space on the sort of Progress Toronto left-leaning side of things? I wonder. I don't know.
Yeah, they are all older. They're all well into their Zoomer years, all of those who are aligned with Olivia Chow. I'm thinking there may be a couple of younger councillors who are more, quote unquote, progressive, left-leaning. Ziv, what do you give the mayor in terms of a grade?
I don't know what I give her, but what I will say is it's not good. I mean, like, basically, my view of being the mayor is you're getting out there and you're fixing the things that are broken. That's what the mayor needs to be focused on a daily basis, fixing the potholes, making sure construction projects are being done efficiently, quickly. Residents are really impacted by those things. Snow removal. Like, there has to be a sense of urgency. You're, at the end of the day, you're like a manager, right? So you got to approach it like it's, like there's got to be urgency. And your mentality should be being a problem fixer. And that's what I think. There needs to be more of it in the city. Another thing I'd like to see is more of a focus on, like, actual community consultations where residents, they're not only being heard and gathering to hear about, changes to their communities and neighborhoods, but, like, the things that they're actually being actualized, what their feedback, the feedback that they're providing.
Yeah, well said, Steve. Dean, from an outsider's point of view, any reflections on Olivia Chow? I mean, you're more in touch with what's happening here in the city.
I feel really underqualified to really comment on that. But I was going to give her a 5 out of 10, if thinking in terms of numbers, only because she just seems to be very reactionary. She doesn't seem to be very forward-thinking. Right. She seems to just be apologizing for things that went wrong. And, I'm going to do it better next time. And a lot of lip service seems to be. So that's the impression that I get of her from my end.
Yeah, I think that people really respect someone with vision, even if they don't agree with them. If they have a vision and they can and they can articulate that vision and execute on it, I think that the level of respect it increases for sure. It's going to be a long journey still before the October election, and we've used up all of our time, but I am so grateful for this special free-for-all panel discussion with Dean Holland, Tasha Carradine, and Ziv Hatti. Thank you so much, all three of you.
Thank you very much, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Yes, Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year.
And join Tasha here in Libby's seat on Monday when she'll be with the Zoomer Squad. I encourage you, if you missed some of the episodes this past week, Best to Fight Back, 12:30 tomorrow and on Sunday with yours truly, Jane. For Libby, have a wonderful weekend, and we'll talk again on Monday on the Morning Zoom with Andy and Jane at 6 a.m.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.